And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. For this next segment, we have Dr. Carl Merritt on the line, who is an MD and a master's of engineering. And as a biomedical engineer person, he gives us a really interesting perspective on this whole electromagnetic concerns that we're having these days about Wi-Fi and 5G, et cetera, because Dr. Merritt also is very knowledgeable in the area of energy medicine and electromagnetics in health. So what's good? What's bad? What do we do about all this stuff? Dr. Carl, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be with you this afternoon.
Yeah. Now, you just came from the Commonwealth Club meeting on electromagnetics and health. What's your takeaway from that?
Well, that was a very good meeting last Tuesday, and people can actually listen to that on KQED podcasts. It was Tuesday, December the 3rd, and I presented on some of the electromagnetic concerns I have about 4G and 5G and the anticipated antenna densification. We're going to be rolling out, according to what the FCC wants, under 5G, about 6 times more antennas than have been put out in the last 3 decades.
And yeah, every 1,000 feet or so.
Right. Yeah, 800,000 or million antennas by 2025. So I talked about, and maybe we can discuss some of the health concerns I have about.
Yeah, we'd like to know what your, you know, the bottom line is with that as far as you're concerned. What are you investigating? From what I can see, it needs a lot more research.
Absolutely. I mean, this is being rolled out, and Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut asked in February this year the cell phone industry, what kind of research have you done about this new kind of 5G antennas? And they said absolutely none, because they just make the assumption that it's safe if it doesn't heat up the tissue, which is called the thermal exposure limits.
Yeah, but there are other things too, right, besides heat.
Yes. Well, we know now for the last 20 years that there is tremendous amount of data in animal studies, cell culture studies, and in human studies of the effect of cell tower radiation, wireless radiation from cell phones, cordless phones, even your Wi-Fi at home, and it's being rolled out everywhere, and people think that basically it's safe, and it isn't. It isn't safe for many reasons I'll tell you about today, but, you know, you have to begin to start looking at this as a whole new game changer with 5G. Even Rohde and Schwarz, a very famous German company that's been instrumental, they do military research and they do industrial research and 5G, and they say this isn't just the fifth generation, that's what 5G stands for, but it's actually a new paradigm. And even 4G, which is really what's being rolled out, 5G is not even coming till next year because they're still defining the standards for
and
that.
You need both of them to have 5G anyway. You need 4G.
Yeah, well, they're basically each generation tries to incorporate the past generations, you know. And so right now it's being rolled out as 4G, but in this what's called extended pro 5G, or 4G rather, that's what's going on in Santa Cruz and many other areas in the Bay Area. They're basically using directional beams. This is called beamforming technology. And when I was in the Canadian military as a radar officer, we used that to basically beam array using kind of phased arrays where there's many, many antennas, and they can steer the beam to exactly where you want to go in order to pick up a target. Well, that's what's going to start happening in the current 5G rollout.
Why is that bad? I mean, wouldn't that focus the radiation in specific beams and avoid most of everything else?
Well, it sounds from an engineering perspective, and I'm an electrical engineer and biomedical engineer, and as you mentioned, and from an engineering perspective, they want to give you better connectivity to the beam, and so it's going to go right to your cell phone, and then as you move around, it's going to track you, you know, but because they haven't done any health studies, you know, your head may be right in the way if the phone is on the other side of your head where the beam is. So it'll go either around your head or through your head. And we just don't know because they haven't done any health studies, but it'll be much more concentrated. And even a paper published last year in Health Physics, which is basically a very key paper that studied for the safety, they think that the actual beam potentially could be 1,000 times more, and it might exceed the current exposure criteria that are set by the FCC.
Is this considerably more than Wi-Fi in its effect, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll be more. I mean, the biggest radiation most people get is from their cell phone or their cordless phone. They get it also from Wi-Fi because it's really there at home most of the time, day and night. And this is a real problem for people. Over time, they get more and more sensitized to this radiation because we have biological windows where we actually respond to that. And it doesn't mean that it heats up your tissue, but it causes all kinds of stress on the body, oxidative stress, which means that you're basically having unpaired free radicals in your body that cause a breakdown of your membranes. You know, we're seeing many effects I can elaborate, but the big thing we're seeing is people are having more and more neurological imbalances and psychiatric imbalances.
Mm-hmm. And you think this is like the tobacco industry in the 70s is being covered up?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely. You can simply look at what Henry Lay at the University of Washington, he studied this for decades, and he looked at all the papers that were basically done by the industry and then the papers that were done independently. And when you compare those, non-industry studies show 70% of the time harmful effects and only 30% no effects. And when you do industry-funded studies, it's exactly the opposite. 68% of the time there's no effect and 32% there's a harmful effect. So
fake news has permeated science too.
Oh, yes. This is a big business for the telecom industry. And this is basically when Wheeler announces, the former chairman of the FCC, who had been an industry lobbyist, you know, for a long time before he became FCC chairman under Obama. And he said, look, the industry should take the lead. We shouldn't stand in the way. The industry should set all the standards, et cetera. We're not going to in any way hinder this because this is a multi-billion dollar industry, something like $285 billion rollout. It always looks good. As an engineer, I can see from an engineering perspective, you might get better signal quality. They want more bandwidth because they're telling you they want essentially driverless cars, movies downloading in a second, the Internet of Things,
yes,
millions of devices. That's what they're basically selling you. That's the Kool-Aid, you know, that basically everybody is drinking and saying, oh, we absolutely need this, but we haven't done any health studies, you see.
Okay. Carl, can you hold on for a moment? We're going to a commercial break. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes. We're talking to Dr. Carl Merritt on electromagnetics and health, looking at some of the detrimental elements of it right now. Be right back. Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Dr. Carl Merritt on electromagnetics and health. And Carl, at some point I wanted to go to the positive elements as well, because it sounds pretty severe when we're looking at all these things unfolding, and we're probably not easy to stop them, and it's affecting our health. What do we do about 5G? It's a lot of money behind this evolution. What can we do?
Well, user beware is the first thing. Yes, it's not about to go away, and because we know so much and because the exposure criteria are old, the last update was 1996. There's been almost over two decades of research where we've looked at the problems, but the FCC won't update the standards, even though American Academy of Pediatrics and American Academy of Environmental Medicine and other groups are constantly writing and saying, look, we have to revisit this, but it won't, because the FCC is a captured organization. You can read that by Norm Ulster, how it's a captured agency, and so it's captured by the industry. it's not going to go away.
Yeah.
So what can we do?
Citizen scientists. What about citizen scientists? What can we do? Can we? I noticed in one of your pieces you talked about a dosimeter that you could wear.
Yeah, we have a dosimeter. It was built in Germany by a company called Maschek Electronics that's about the size of a pack Virginia Slims that you wear on your arm. Mm-hmm. They did it to study school children in Bavaria and to see how high the exposure limits are. So the key thing to understand is that when you do heating measurements, whether it heats your tissue, which is what the standards are about, 6 minutes exposure to cell phone radiation or 30 minutes to other radiation from cell towers and so on, you know, you're only capturing sort of acute, but what's happening here is it's pulsing all the time, and biological systems are very sensitive to pulsing radiation, and that's about to increase as we go to higher frequencies. So the first thing I would recommend positively is use your cell phone not next to your head. They've classified the pinna of the ear, the basic conch of the ear, as an extremity, and an extremity can have a lot more radiation. So that's one way they get around
further away from your head. Well, like speakerphone mode.
In speakerphone mode, it's not private, or you can use a
headset,
an earphone. You know, there's things called Bluetooth that basically don't even put the wire right into your ear. They have a, sort of an air gap at the end. They're called Bluetooth headphones. You can get those. You can certainly wire your computers at home with Ethernet or fiber optics, and at least turn the wireless off at night so you're not exposed all night long while your body is in repair mode and healing. Yeah. I believe we shouldn't have all the kids instrumented at schools with various laptops, or, and they shouldn't be really called laptop, they're really portable computers, because they affect reproductive organs. They, absolutely affect fertility. The sperm are misshapen when you expose them. So carrying a cell phone in your pocket is not a good idea, all right, where your reproductive organs are.
All the time? Is there more radiation when you're getting a call as opposed to just sitting there?
Well, the radiation varies depending on how far you are from a tower. If you're close to a tower, you'll get many bars, and then actually the radiation is lower because it uses automatic gain control. So the further away you are, the more the phone tries to stay in touch with the cell tower, and the higher the radiation goes.
Now, how much radiation is this? I mean, I've heard that the average cell phone is about a third of the kiddie walkie-talkies we used to have as children, 100 milliwatts.
Well, first of all, you have to differentiate between what it's capable of producing in terms of pure power and then what the radiated power is. So the radiated power of a phone is like what's called equivalent isotropic radiated power. It's about 3 watts on the cell phone.
Three watts.
Most of it can go down as little as a milliwatt if you're very close to the tower, which isn't very much. So not only is the power important, then the power density, which is how much power per square meter
or per centimeter. Sure.
Yeah, that's the field, the strength of the field that's being radiated. And that goes up and down all the time. And it depends what frequency it's running
at.
Different systems work at different frequencies. And again, the technology is moving much, much faster than the science can keep up.
I've heard, now you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I've heard that it's so fast and so new that the AT&T standard, I think it's 39 gigahertz, and the Verizon 28 gigahertz, 27 or 28 gigahertz, haven't really even been tested yet because we haven't been able to keep up.
Exactly. And these are what we call a high band. That isn't even rolled out yet. What's happening right now, they're going down to 600 megahertz.
Yeah, the T-Mobile.
Which are long waves, and then they're going up to 3.5 gigahertz, you know, where kind of your Wi-Fi operates, but usually at much lower power. But it's on all the time. So duration of on time, as it were, or exposure is an important criteria, especially when you think about it. And then now they're moving into the high band frequencies, and they were released in 2016 as well. And with that, you have a whole new frequency band that hasn't been here before that is starting to be implemented and disguised. Like in Huntington Beach, they call them fusion poles. You know, they look like basic light poles, but the antennas are built right into them.
Right,
other
right.
people have other ways as well.
But no tests on them. They haven't really been tested for health reasons yet, right?
No, that's right. So it's 28 gigahertz was released, 37 gigahertz band, 39 to 40 gigahertz, and then 64 to 71. That's an unlicensed band. So this is where the faster you go, the higher you go up in frequency, the more data you can put through. So it's going to be pulsing a lot more, but these are the carrier frequency. You know, the carrier is, in this case, a digital signal carrier that is pulsing in different phases. Of
How much better would it, how much better will it be from, say, today's smartphones?
Well, they haven't even finished designing all the smartphones. They're just coming out in 2020, and there's a lot of hype when they say it's a 5G phone. It's much more complicated when you go into what's called millimeter waves. These are a fraction of an inch, you know.
Yeah.
The millimeter waves will start interacting with the sweat glands of your body. They'll interact with your acupuncture.
Oh, okay. So that's where it gets interesting. Now you're talking bioactive frequencies now that are very...
Potentially bioactive. They should all be studied, but they're just being released. And then there's all the satellites. Elon Musk's Starlink system is planning to put out 42,000 satellites. They launched the first batch this spring.
Yes, we covered that quite extensively. I would say, yes, that's an alternative to 5G, wouldn't you say?
Well, it is part of 5G. It's not an alternative.
Really? They're using the same frequencies?
They're using that. They want to set up a network around. They're going to use the same beamforming technology to beam down. Now, they're much further away, but they're in near-Earth orbit.
Right.
And basically, it gives you no place anymore to see where you could not be affected. And this is important if you're electrically hypersensitive, which is a growing percentage of the population. California, it's somewhere between 3% and 8% of the population. Even if you take the lowball number, and these studies are already many years old, there's a lot more people I'm seeing clinically that are electrically hypersensitive. These people really can't function. I've had captains of industry from Silicon Valley. They had to move out of the valley because there's so much radiation in the valley. And to them, they're like the canary in the coal mines, right? They can't even live in there.
Right, so you'd say this is on the level of climate change in terms of importance, huh?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things we talked about at the Commonwealth Club meeting, there was a scientist there from who used to be a telecom officer, worked for IBM and other people in the valley, went back to Holland and spent the last 12 years researching the effect of all these frequencies and electromagnetics and all different ranges on water. And he is saying the water that's falling now, even in rain, because it's falling through all the electromagnetic frequencies that are being radiated, is being tremendously affected. You have to understand this water isn't just H2O, and what's in our bodies is water in the cells that has what we call quantum coherence. It's basically in phase, like a laser beam has waves in phase, as opposed to, say, a light bulb or a light-emitting diode. They're not coherent.
Yeah.
This coherent water in our bodies makes us extremely sensitive and has certain biological windows that we can respond to even at very low levels. So this is like Chinese torture over time. People get affected by this. They don't even know they're being affected. And the classical symptoms that people with electrical hypersensitivity get are things like fatigue, cognitive impairments, inability to sleep well, inability to function.
But you don't know what's causing all these things. It seems like those are...
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, how do all of these frequencies interact with, say, the sunshine radiation coming in? Like, how are they in terms of power,
invisible light,
density,
has way more energy behind
interference,
it.
And, you know, which, like, what's going on? How much of this manufactured fog is competing with sunlight, and what are the relative issues?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, and that's what Dolph Santinger from Holland talked about. We are very much geared evolutionarily to be responding to visible light. Now, visible light is above radio frequency and microwave in the millimeter range. It's even faster, right?
And a lot of energy behind it, too, right?
Yeah, and the faster you go in frequency, the more energy there is. That's basic quantum physics. So energy equals Planck's constant times frequency. So the higher you go, the more energy is. And at a certain point, like above visible light, it comes ultraviolet and X-ray and gamma rays.
Yes.
And those directly affect, obviously, your DNA. That's what physicists tell you you should avoid, and that's absolutely true.
But we got to go to a break for news. Can you stay on for another segment?
Absolutely, yes.
All right, great. Okay, great, Carl. We were talking to Dr. Carl Merritt, electromagnetics and health. And
I'm so sorry to cut you off right then, Carl. I hope we can come back to it.
Yeah, keep
the
bookmark right
yes,
there.
Yes, let's continue.
Okay, great.
We'll be back.
All right, thanks. Talk to Future Show and Carl Merritt. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We're talking to Dr. Carl Merritt about electromagnetics and health, and specifically, Mrs. Future had asked you a question about how do these frequencies behave with respect to sunlight, and Carl was giving us a little download on that when we had to go to break. Do you remember where you were, Carl?
Yes, well, we were talking about how we are basically geared to receive sunlight. It stimulates vitamin D production in our skin. It has many beneficial health effects. Of course, it also has ultraviolet in it, which we talked about is more ionizing radiation. So you can get burned from it and from what's called actinic radiation and so on.
But overall, sunlight radiations are good for you, mostly.
Very, very good. And you can modulate light the same way as you could modulate radio frequency waves and microwaves to transmit data. It's very similar in the idea there. But what they found in Europe is if they looked at water at different light frequencies, you know, infrared, visible light, ultraviolet, which is called spectroscopy, looking at the frequency response of that, and it's a standard physics approach, and they found that this water would start getting very much impacted by the radiation, the radio frequency radiation, and they found it everywhere. And that water falls on the ground and actually starts to affect our whole soil bacteria, the funguses in the soil, and they found a way to actually restructure the water so it becomes coherent again. And we hope to bring that into America. That was presented at the Commonwealth Club last Tuesday as well. And so then we can overcome that, because right now we're seeing more and more people being affected by without even knowing about it.
The water.
You think about, and the water can help structure the body again. They found that in several generations, when they used this coherent, healthy water that had been destroyed by electromagnetics on farms, the seeds became more and more powerful. They had a greater genetic diversity. There was greater growth and so forth. So we have great hopes that we may have something to offset this, because this technology doesn't seem to be studied or going away anytime soon. And we're starting to see tremendous health effects in lots of people, and this is very concerning to me.
Can I ask a question?
Yes,
like,
certainly.
When you talk about coherence as a property of water, are you talking about some kind of an electromagnetic property, or are you talking about a crystal formation, or what is it that makes something coherent?
It's basically a quantum physics looking at that. And Italian quantum physicists have looked at this, and like Del Guidici, Emilio Del Guidici from Italy, and Emilio Preparata. And so these people have studied this and say, look, what's actually happening in the cell is that the water is vibrating in synchrony. It's called quantum coherence. And it's not unlike a laser beam where all the waves are in phase, so you can be very directed with it. Now, that can be used for good and for bad. Lasers can be used for cutting things open, or they can be used for inducing healing responses. That kind of light is very, very effective. Similarly, in energy medicine, we use light, say, at 60 nanometers in the red part of the spectrum, and you put that on the body, and it creates tremendous healing responses by upregulating the energy-producing parts of the cell that are called mitochondria. It is these mitochondria that have certain certain enzymes in that, like the cytochrome C oxidase system and so on, that basically get regenerated through light and so on. So we use lasers for healing at specific color or light frequency.
That's a red laser, right?
It's a red laser, yeah. And 656 is where hydrogen bonds vibrate, you know, and so on. So this basically
the
body...
So we really have to be discerning about which frequencies we are using and how we are directing them.
Yes, I mean, right. Fun fact, I mean, 2.4 gigahertz is Wi-Fi, 2.5 is microwave ovens.
2.45 is microwave ovens. The difference between your Wi-Fi and your microwave oven is, first of all, your microwave oven has a lot more power. That's why it has to be shielded, you know, and you have to make sure it doesn't leak.
Sure.
But it's a continuous wave. It's just a lot of power pumped into your water. Basically, it heats up water by vibrating the bond between the oxygen and the hydrogen. So it's kind of like the little arms are waving differently, and that's why it stays hot so long, as opposed to heating it on the stove.
Oh. So back to the conversation you had about the idea that pulsing is actually part of the issue that needs to be studied, because it seems like one of the reasons they're talking about pulsing is to actually interrupt the amount of power that's going into the signal, as well as to create more channels of frequencies that can be transmitted through the same hardware. But are there such things as pulsing frequencies that are actually beneficial as opposed to non-beneficial?
Yes, there would be, and they need to be studied, but they're basically saying, look, if we average all these pulses, then we can get the power level that would heat up tissue. But when we look at these nanosecond pulses, you know, fraction of a second pulses, microsecond and nanosecond pulses, they're very, very short, billionth of a second and so on. That's what's being used. That's good for data transmission, but it also can set off what we call calcium, voltage-gated calcium channels in our brain. And we know this effect because people who are electrically sensitive and who can't function neurologically anymore, if you give them calcium channel blocker drugs, their symptoms start getting better. And that's what
calcium for blood pressure is one of the chemistries that's used for studying brain activity and the creation of synapses, etc.
Yeah, every calcium is a mediator. In order for the brain cell to fire or the muscle to contract, calcium is exchanged and goes into the cell. So if we can do that with electromagnetics at very low level, you can start to see how it has an effect on the brain and especially the mitochondria, the energy-producing part of the brain. And this is what's breaking down in older people. So to the point now that older people are dying at a lesser rate from cancer and heart disease, even though those are the two biggest reasons why people die. But in women, in the last 20 years, there's been a six-fold increase in deaths from neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and ALS and Parkinsonism and all these things, you know, and in men it's three times as much. And I can send you these papers. I mean, it's frightening. And in young people, if you look at the study that just came out this year by Blue Cross and Blue Shield, young people, the millennials born between 1981 and 1996, they are now starting to have chronic illnesses starting at age 27, major decline with depression, hyperactivity, diabetes taking place in 27-year-olds, you know, and they're really worried about it. That's, they studied 55 million Americans and started to say, all the young people who are the I generation, you know, hyper-connected generation.
That have been brought up with this technology on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you know, I can say that's kind of a depressing movie in a way, but just on the same time, you are an expert in electromagnetics. You've seen how electromagnetics can be in healing. What is the potential that we have for creating electromagnetic healing machines?
Well, they're tremendous. We use them. You can use magnetic fields that penetrate through things and pulse them at the right way. I mean, in this country, Royal Raymond Rife was a researcher. He studied in Heidelberg University. He developed and studied frequencies that would be used for healing through resonance, you know, because we have to start thinking of frequencies as like tuning forks radiating, you know, between each other and creating resonance. And you can do that with cells. You can do that with tissue and so on. also there's things like frequency-specific microcurrent that people like Carol McMakin in Portland have written textbooks about. It's being and used in medicine. It works better than some drugs for inflammation and so on. Very, very fast.
So they could be as effective as pharmaceuticals, electromagnetic treatments.
They even are. Yeah, she studied this, and they are affected. But you have to know that every tissue in your body resonates to certain frequencies.
So you have to tune it in specifically to the...
And would you say that every person is different, or you think that there are some specific frequencies that are pretty much generally good for everyone versus general some specific frequencies that are generally bad for everyone?
We are humans, I guess. There's a certain amount of commonality, you know.
I mean, is it individualized, or is it more generic?
It's both. It's individualized because every human being is different and everybody has different genetics. But certain frequencies for certain tissues are generic in that way. So what you have to do is understand what the suffering of the person is you have in front of you and what the cause of their illness is. But frequencies have been used for non-union fractures of bones. You know, they're like 1,000 cycles a second at certain magnetic field strengths and so on.
Yes.
They can be put through electrodes through the body. You can sit in front of a plasma tube that is has basically a big magnetic field, and you can transmit right frequencies for there. It ought to be studied as part of what we call tomorrow's energy medicine. Right now we have a chemical medicine, right.
And I was going to say this spectrum medicine must be vastly more complex than the chemical medicine, just because there's so many more.
Well, they're both complex, I would say.
Well, yeah, they are, but just in orders of magnitude.
Or the combination of the two, like the blood-brain barrier using...
Go ahead. I'm glad you bring that up, Ellen, because the blood-brain barrier is what gets breached with electromagnetics. There have been studies since the 60s about that. Alan Frey did initial studies with that. They did studies of that in Sweden and everything, and it's at very low levels. And that means the protective net around the brain that prevents chemicals and heavy metals and other toxins to get into
breached.
The brain.
Yeah.
It's breached, right. Mm-hmm. And the brain talks all the time to the gut. We know now this stuff is starting to affect the microbiome, which is the bacterial flora.
It's quite a system. I mean, we have to go to a break for a second. Can you hold on for our final 15 minutes?
All right.
Dr. Carl Merritt, speaking of electromagnetics and health. We'll be right back after the break.
And we have callers. And
yes, we have some callers for you, Carl.
479-1080. Okay. And we'll be right back. Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Carl Merritt, who is actually a practicing health practitioner in Aptos here. Isn't that right, Carl?
Yes, that's right.
You have an office, you call naturopathic medicine? Is what you're...
Well, I'm trained as a medical doctor, but I really do more integrative medicine, everything from natural medicine, not with drugs and so on, because I'm a Canadian doctor. But I do a lot of consultation with people all over the country in terms of health concerns of all kinds. And, it's more oriented towards holistic or naturopathic medicine.
Yeah, in improving normality, as I like to say.
Right.
And you do a great job with that, I have to say. I really admire your diagnostics and your techniques.
So we have a caller on the line. Carl, you ready for a question from the audience?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd like to welcome Greg and Gilroy, who has a question for our guest, Carl Merritt.
Yes, Dr. Merritt, I was wondering if you were aware of the huge study that the Navy did on radio frequency effect on the body back in the 60s, I think it was.
Yes, absolutely. That was done by Zori Glazer. He put it all together. The Navy was very interested in it, the U.S. Navy, because they started having all kinds of people affected by radar on ships and so on. They published hundreds of papers at different power levels, at different frequencies, and that whole archive ended up in the Zori Glazer's garage, and then Mark DeHavis from Canada, from Trent University, got a hold of it. He gave it all to her, and you can get all that online, and that actually showed the early studies in the 60s of how much we knew about the adverse effects. Of course, it was not with modern telecommunications technologies we use now. They were interested in radar and radio frequency radiation at those frequencies they used in the Navy. But absolutely, that data is out there, and people ought to familiarize themselves with it.
Yeah, I was concerned because everybody keeps saying it's never been studied, and I'm thinking, yeah, it has been studied, but not in today's standards, but there's a lot of information there still.
Yeah, and another good resource, hundreds of scientists have all put their work together. It's been edited by David Carpenter. It's called bioinitiative.org, bioinitiative.org. Another good reference for people is look under Defra Davis's work from the Environmental Health Trust, EH for Environmental Health, ehtrust.org is a good one. My colleague Camilla Reese, who was on the show, I understand, recently, she has a website, electromagnetichealth.org. These are all non-profit or public educational areas that study and take part of tracking the literature, as I do. I think we now have thousands of studies. The big problem is that the industry has a huge influence on the regulatory thing. And remember that the FCC has absolutely no health people on board. They keep deferring to the FDA. The FDA says it's safe, and that's a revolving door with the pharmaceutical industry. So it's kind of a problem, and you have to understand that there isn't one telecom company who can get insurance for health-related effects. Okay? Swiss Re, Lloyds of London, all the big insurance companies said, that, look, we can't insure you because we know there's problems, and no telecom company can be insured for damages they create.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right.
If you have any questions for Dr. Carl Merritt, 831-479-1080.
I do see another caller. You want to go right to it?
Sure.
Okay. Let's say hello to Michael in Santa Cruz. Hello, Michael.
Hi. You can answer this question off the air, but I was listening to the electrical or magnetic that we have in our bodies. And I was one of those kids way back in the Timex days. I'm 55 plus years old, and watches used to go haywire on me within a day, maybe two, and then later in life, when I was probably about 20, I figured out, or I was taught, that I could witch for water lines, stuff like that.
Oh, you're a dowser, huh?
Yeah, and so it's like, I don't know what that has to do, but the interesting part was, I was born and raised in California. I went to, and I can play pool. The weird part was I went to Asia on a vacation with my family, and I'm trying to play pool, and I couldn't hit it in a pocket to save my life.
And in the Southern Hemisphere, perhaps?
I guess. So it's like, I don't know if that's polarity or what. It's just like, I was like, wow. I was like so off.
You got anything to say about that, Carl?
Yeah, that's actually a great story. Yeah, I've seen and heard these things. Dowsers are people who have very great sensitivity. Water, when it flows, gives off a certain subtle radiation that dowsers utilize, and they have a sort of a feedback system where, depending if they use a pendulum or with a divining rod of some sort, everybody has an electrical sense. We have crystals in our brain that are filled with magnetite, which is an iron oxide, and we have like millions of them in our tissues in the brain that gives us a magnetic sense. Now, when you went to Asia, I was just in Peking giving a talk, or Beijing, last December, and I was amazed how many antennas and how much surveillance is in that country and as many other Asian countries. Korea is very heavily instrumented with cell towers and everything, and they're also working on 5G. They're probably 5 years ahead of us.
They're kind of guinea pigs, and that's
yeah. I'm not surprised that he was negatively affected through not being able to perhaps use his cue in playing pool or whatever, it's essentially an adverse effect, and he's probably hypersensitive. And there's ways to test this now. We have chemicals you can measure things that are very, very accurate now. So it ought to be a medical condition, but most doctors haven't really been trained to see it as all. You know, like nitrotyrosine can be measured and various other markers, histamine markers. These people who are electrically hypersensitive look very much like people who are chemically, multiple chemical sensitive. And in France, Dr. Belpomme has studied this extensively. He studies these kind of people. He measures the brain blood flow, and he shows how it's really terrifically decreased until they go into areas like where there's radio telescopes, where there's no electromagnetic fields, and then these people can recover. But nowadays, you know, we're exposed all the time. You know, it's very hard to get away from it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Mike. We're going to go to another caller. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got two text questions, too.
All right. Do you want to...
Yeah, I'll do one of the text questions and then...
Hang tight here, Josh. We'll get to just a second.
Yeah. Gregory in Long Beach asks whether or not building a Faraday-type cage in your house would be a good way to mitigate exposure from when you're sleeping and relaxing. And if so, could it be done inexpensively?
Well, there's two things about that. Yes, a Faraday cage will filter it out if it has enough mesh to filter out the frequencies you want to filter out. You've got to make sure then there's no devices like Wi-Fi in it, because it'll bounce around inside.
Oh, no. That could not be good.
So, you know, but you can shield it. You can shield walls with paint. You can shield, you know, smart meters were started being put in, and people didn't even know, and suddenly they started getting electrically hypersensitive and so on. So there's even scientific studies showing that. So, yes, you can filter it out. It can be expensive. Some people sleep with fabric draped over the bed, like mosquito netting, that has silver wires in it. And it's not the cheapest thing.
Yeah.
But it can be done, and I would suggest you contact a building biologist. There's an Institute for Building Biology in this country. These are people trained in this to remediate.
All right, great. So we're going to go to Josh in Hollister in our last 3 minutes here.
And I've got
another
text question, too.
Hi.
Hey, Jen.
I have a quick question. I, as a consumer, I wanted to know, what do we do with this information now that we have it? That was my first question. My second question was, is 5G, you think, going to be a big threat to the population from maybe hacking or modifying emotions? I've heard that it can do that. I've just heard a YouTube video stuff on 5G. I'm not really that educated.
Yeah, I understand the question. Well, what you can do, as I mentioned, you know, we need to avoid it. If we can, talk to our elected representative to slow down the 5G using the precautionary principle. We're trying to talk to the supervisors and the city councils. We're getting various cities in California on the legal side of this. Can we slow it down? You can use this technology for surveillance. You can use Wi-Fi, even the 2.4. You can look through walls and see phase changes, so you can track people.
Yeah.
You can pick up at the higher frequencies, like 24. You can pick up the heartbeat at a distance, and with heart rate variability, you can tell about the emotional state of the person at a distance. So sooner or later, this will all be able to be used for surveillance as well.
We're going to wrap it up.
Okay, one more thing. Another question is, that what kind of study would be really good for looking at 5G at this point? What should we have?
Oh, that's a huge question. I think at the first point is, we should really see, what do these directed beams, what's the power density, how much do they hit the person, what's the psychological, mental effects on the people, behavioral effect.
Okay.
That's where we should start, and make sure that we get this done by the government or by independent groups.
Thank you, Dr. Carl Merritt.
Yes, thank you, Carl, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it, as does our community.
And again, if people want to contact you, Carl, do you want to give them some info?
Well, they can email me at Merritt, my last name is spelled M-A-R-E-T, at cruzio.com, or call my office, 831-662-8421, 662-8421.
Great. Thank you again, Carl. Appreciate it. Really good
great
show.
Great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
KCS Santa Cruz.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.